Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson RV, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. That's Joey Pyburn. I'm Tom Nelson. Matt Nelson running the board. Back behind the glass there. So hit Eastmans.com and roll over to the Eastmans Elevated page. That is the website of our next guest, none other than Brian Barney of Eastmans Elevated Podcast. What's up, Mr. Barney? Been a while.
Morning, Brian.
Hey, guys. Yeah, good to talk to you.
Well, you know, we spend a lot of time on the water in the summer, but, you know, guys are definitely, you know, kind of looking overhead, and there's some waterfowl heading that way, and it won't be long before those before the elk are bugling in your neck of the woods, if they're not already. So what gets you fired up, man? What's coming up really close and up close and personal for you here shortly?
Well, like you, I love the water as well, and the summertime's a great time for it. But yeah, we're coming into fall and hunting season, and this is what I wait all year for. So I train year-round to get ready for these hunts, and so I'm just getting back from a big adventure. I did a big one in Nevada for high country mule deer, so it was all above 10,000 feet with my bow and arrow. I took a cameraman in there, and we grinded out a heck of a hunt that just took next-level effort in there, and then able to arrow up a great buck at the end of it, capture the whole thing for a video that'll be out on Eastman. So I'm already getting started. I already have that buck down. Got an antelope about a week later or so, so I've got some antelope in the freezer and getting ready for the next big adventure. The next one's Colorado above 13,000 feet, I think, Tuesday.
Smokes. Yeah, I mean, you're late August, early September is usually kind of dedicated to chasing mule deer. What do you have on the docket this year for elk?
Yeah, so once it gets into about mid-September and into October, I can't think about anything but hunting elk. Like, they have to be the most thrilling animal to hunt with a bow and arrow, especially during the rut. And there's so many great opportunities out there. And so I've got a tag in my home state of Montana, and they allow us to hunt with their bow and arrow till about mid-October. So I'll kind of have that in my back pocket, and I'll actually start hunting late September to early October for that one as the pressure kind of wanes and there's still some good rutting action. And then I hold up an Idaho general season tag. So that's going to be where I'm at after I get back from this Colorado hunt around September 10th or so. Till the end of September, I'll be hunting that tag. So, yeah, I got a couple elk tags in my pocket. I'm lucky.
And a lot of guys, you know, the thing about elk is in the elk woods during, you know, the rut, having an elk within 100, you know, even 150 yards, and they're screaming their heads off, it's one of the, I don't know, it's one of the most exciting, thrilling things you can do in the hunting world is call in a bull elk. And I know you call elk in, you get in there and bugle, but you also really like to spot and stalk elk. Just similar to what you do, you're like one of the best, you know, big mountain mule deer hunters. You stalk in and kill these giant bucks and way up in the mountains. And you kind of take that and you take it to the elk hunting world and you're spot and stalking these bulls. Talk a little bit about spot and stalk big bulls, kind of that later season, late September, early October.
Yeah. Well, you're spot on. It's about the most primal feelings you can get chasing a big bull elk. And if you don't think buck fever's real, like, go chase the bull while he's bugling. You know, it makes you nervous as all get out. But yeah, I've adopted this strategy of spot and stalking these bulls. And, you know, I called a lot of bulls in, you know, younger in my career. But I just found that I was calling a lot of satellite bulls in. And then I found that they just come in on pins and needles. And, you know, I don't get to hunt a lot of premium tags. Like, most of the tags I hunt are over-the-counter or low-point units, and so they're high-pressure elk. So these bulls that grow to 5, 6, 7 years old, they've been called to. They've heard a hoochie mama. They've heard cow calls. And not that you can't call these bulls in, but they've got to be in the right mood, and you got to catch them at the right time. And so I just found, like, targeting these larger herd bulls that I had more success keeping the element of surprise and not letting them know I'm even in the country. And so I still get to listen to them rut, listen to them bugle. I still get to interact in it. But what I do is I find these elk by using my glass and by hearing them. And then I'll shadow the herd. I'll stay 100 to 200 yards and just try to keep with them and then look for my opportunity to go all in. You know, when I have some topography or I have a rise that I can use, or I bet a bull down, or I get them in a position where I can get close, and then I stalk in, and I use that terrain and that undulation to move in close, wait for my opportunity to get drawn. And then, you know, elk are big targets, but they take a perfect shot. They're the toughest animal on planet Earth. And so you really got to wait for the right angle on them, execute a good shot, put it in that lungs, heart, or liver, and it's a dead bull. So yeah, I've just developed this strategy for spot and stalking these bulls. It's been highly successful. Last year, I took my best bull to date. He was over 350, and then I also took a 330 bull. Wow. In a different state. So it works really well for me.
Yeah, and when you say shadow the herd, I don't know if a lot of guys understand how difficult that can be. When you have a herd of elk during the rut, they can move extremely quickly across the hillside, the woods, whatever terrain they're in. And that's where your training all year comes into play is, you know, I mostly hunt muzzleloader here in Washington because my cousin Ryan would always gobble up the archery season. And so I've had to do that before too. And it, you know, I mean, they move fast. Like, you almost have to be running at some, you know, sometimes to keep up with those elk. So talk a little bit about, you know, keeping in shape throughout the year just for your hunting season. What is some of the things you do to stay in shape?
Yeah, fitness is huge. It plays a major role in the success of my hunts and also the enjoyment. And like you say, elk can travel tens of miles, and they love to walk uphill. It's kind of like that old adage, walk uphill both ways. That's an elk. It's always walking uphill. And so, yeah, I just found that, you know, when I was younger, the more I train for these hunts, the better I do. So for me, it's trail running, and it can be different for everybody. It's just getting those workouts day in, day out. For me, the key is elevation. So I used to run marathons and half marathons and run them on the roads and things, but now it's all trails and it's all elevation. It's all getting up, climbing, you know, doing 1,000 feet of vert, 2,000 feet of vert, and then coming down. And it's just getting my body and my legs used to that climb day in, day out, and used to the miles and the exertion. So that works really good for me. And I do, you know, total body fitness. So like I've got a routine that I do a lot of body weight exercises, push-ups, pull-ups, kettlebells, but really the bulk of my training is all in the mountains and all in trail running. And it's a matter of discipline too. It's making myself do it day in, day out. Like here in Montana, you know, it can be 20 below and the wind can be blowing in the wintertime, but I just make myself lace up my shoes day in, day out, because, you know, the bigger goal is to kill a bull elk every September. And I know that I have to be in top physical shape to be able to separate myself from the competition and also be able to keep up with these elk. So for me, I just keep seeing the benefits of it. So I just keep putting in the work, more and more work. But for me, dedication, discipline, getting on the trails and running elevation.
Yeah, you might be one of the hardest working guys out there. And you and I kind of talked about this yesterday. It's not for everybody. Not everybody is going to love elk hunting or high country mule deer hunting.
Or have the ability. I mean, we can train here and, you know, and I do at sea level, right? But I can feel it when, you know, like I get over in the Okanagan and you're in 4,500, 5,000 feet. Dude, there's a lot less air at 5,000 feet than there is here at sea level, you know, and on the shores of Puget Sound. Now, Brian just alluded to a 12,000 foot elevation hunt you're doing here next week in Colorado. I mean, that is extremely challenging. I mean, that's cutting edge type of, you know, elite type of hunting right there.
Definitely.
Brian, so is that a muley hunt you're going on there next week?
Yeah, high country muley hunt. Yeah, it's some of the gnarliest, most vast backcountry in the lower 48. These mule deer, they summer and live up there, up where goats and sheep live. And so, it just takes this dedication to hunt the way I like to hunt, to be able to hunt these remote mountain ranges and be efficient and effective. And you're right, like hunting this high elevation isn't for everybody. It's a type 2 fun. Like, at some point during the hunt, you know, it's gonna hurt. It's not gonna be fun the entire time. But when you get back, it's all you can think about. And you know, it's like you never get back from a roller coaster and think about that roller coaster for the next year until you get to ride another one. But these backcountry hunts, you put absolutely everything into them. All this training, all this work, you put it in. And then to come out on top and do one of the most difficult tasks out there is to, you know, arrow up a public land buck or a trophy buck or a trophy bull, you know, to feel those feelings of success that all your hard work paid off. Like, that's what does it for me. That's what drives me in life, you know, to have this passion and to have something that I truly love and willing to put all this work into. And then it transfers to other facets of my life, to my business,
sure
to my family,
absolutely,
to being a father. Like, it just allows me to be a better person, because how you do one thing is how you do everything, you know? And so I try to carry that in life. But yeah, I love putting in the work on these hunts, and I love seeing the payoff.
You want to get fired up about hunting, jump on, listen to Brian Barney's Eastman's Elevated Podcast, man. You got a taste of it right there. Brian, I absolutely wish you the best of luck this season, and don't be a stranger. We definitely want to get you back on air soon, and congratulations on your Nevada buck, and good luck this season, buddy.
Yeah, thanks a bunch, guys. I really appreciate you.
All right,
thanks, Brian.
All right, coming up next, a critically acclaimed, award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The American Pacific Mortgage Northwest Outdoor Report, also known as the Sportsman Sports Center, is brought to you by the great folks at HomeLoanAngler.com, your guide to the most competitive rates, buy or refi.
Marine Area 1 recreational salmon season to close. Effective Monday, August 30th, the Owako recreational salmon season closes following similar action this week to close the Buoy 10 management area to Chinook retention. The catch quotas for recreational quota in Marine Area 1 are expected to be met by the end of the day Sunday, August 29th. Closure comes following a two-week period in which over 15,000 coho and 3,000 Chinook came to the docks in Owako, representing the highest catch rates of the season and pushing the fishery to the quota limit. Anglers will have this weekend to hit Owako, but then we'll have to head north to Marine Area 2, Westport, for saltwater salmon.
Shellfish managers announced 62 tentative dates for razor clam digs at beaches along the Washington coast, beginning in mid-September and running through the end of the year. Final approval of tentatively scheduled openings depends on the results of marine toxin tests. Much of the 2021 razor clam season was impacted by high domoic acid levels, but this year's season so far is looking good, both in terms of clam abundance and domoic acid. All open beaches, Long Beach, Twin Harbors, Moke Rocks, Copalis, will have increased limits through the end of the year. With diggers allowed to keep 20 clams instead of 15, each digger's clams must be kept in a separate container, and all diggers must keep the first 20 clams they dig. Claylock Beach will not be open due to the continuing issues with depressed populations of harvestable clams.
Coastal salmon catch update. In Area 2, Westport, 1,300 anglers tallied 150 Chinook and 2,100 coho for a 1.7 salmon overall catch per rod. Westport's now 42% through the Chinook quota and 49% through that coho quota. In Area 3, La Push, 71 anglers landed 7 Chinook and 260 coho for about a salmon per rod average. In Area 4, Nia Bay, 489 anglers caught 90 Chinook, 160 coho for a 0.6 catch per rod. Nia Bay is at 74% of the Chinook and 31% of the coho quota. Overall, through August, the coast sits at 64% of the coho and 60% of the Chinook ocean quota.
Anglers hoping for a crab dinner have through Labor Day weekend, September 6th, specifically, to get their pots in. While crabbing is now not as early season, there's still plenty of crab looking for an easy meal. The trick to late-season crabbing involves relying on three key factors, namely depth, bait quality, and soak time. Fishing deeper, in excess of 100 feet, is challenging because of line management. Good bait means using all those salmon carcasses you've been stacking up all summer, along with some raised bait crab blocks. Soak time means fishing heavier pots, so they'll be in the same place you dropped them when you come to pick them back up. September 6th, WDFW will do a post-season analysis to determine if we get a winter crab season. And the word on the street is that recreational crabbers will get something in the October to December time frame.
It's the annual event that outdoor bargain hunters have on their radar each and every August. The largest outdoor sale of the year, also known as the Sport Craw Outdoor Emporium Summer Sale, is on now through August 29th. And if you've been waiting to get that rod or reel, now's the time. Choose from a selection of pen spinning reels and get an ugly stick dry bag absolutely free with names like BOMAC, Pro Troll, Coleman Pro Cure, Shakespeare, Fluger, Berkeley, and the complete lineup of Sports Field gun safes. The Sport Craw Outdoor Emporium Summer Sale has you covered. We guarantee our prices will equal or better anything online. You don't need a membership to shop. So for more info, hit sportco.com.
WDFW will begin to offer in-person hunter education classes on August 14th with options for full in-person or hybrid courses. The in-person or hybrid class formats are beneficial for all students. WDFW highly recommends in-person instruction for students under 12 years of age. These courses reinforce important firearm and hunting safety principles, hunting ethics, basic survival and first aid, wildlife identification and conservation. Participants can sign up for classes on WDFW's Hunter Education page. Some classes may be changed on availability and COVID-related restrictions. To help meet public demand, an online course is still available for students who must be at least 9 years old. Log on to wdfw.wa.gov for more information.
Fall marks the start of hunting seasons for deer, elk, waterfowl, and upland game birds in many parts of Washington. So to help hunters have a successful hunting season, WDFW has released its annual Hunting Prospects Report, which provides guidance and hunting information for each district. District wildlife bios write these reports to give an in-depth look at what field conditions should look like this year. These prospects have a lot of useful information to help new and experienced hunters plan their season. And take note that recent hunting surveys indicate that 2021 should be another good hunting year. Hunters should pay special attention to the following items for the upcoming season: changes to forest grouse seasons, wildfire impacts, and youth waterfowl hunting dates. Hit WDFW's hunting page for more information.
The American Pacific Mortgage Northwest Outdoor Report has been brought to you by the great folks at HomeLoanAngler.com, your guide to the most competitive rates, buy or refi.
So those wildfire impacts are definitely going to echo through this hunting season. Although, you know, at least for the Okanagan area, which I, you know, as soon as I got the email last night, the hunting prospects were out, I had to pop into the, you know, Scott Fitkin is the district bio that handles, you know, the Okanagan has for years. And, you know, pretty optimistic with regard to especially older animals over in that neck of the woods.
Yeah.
The muleys are doing pretty good.
Yeah, I read there's a ton of information in there, too. So that's a great resource for guys. Go in there. I mean, it's stacked with info. I was reading through some of it this morning. So one thing guys got to be aware of is the grouse. It's no longer September 1st.
Yeah, September 15th.
There's going to be a bunch of guys.
There is.
If we don't announce this or they don't read it in the pamphlet, there's going to be a bunch of guys out there September 1st going after grouse. And it's been pushed back to September 15th. And they did that because they thought that there were too many family groups being kind of wiped out. I don't really agree with it. I think there's still going to be family groups together on the 15th. And you have a limit, right?
Right.
So I don't know. I don't like it when any hunting season gets kicked back. I want as many early opportunities as we can. We got September 4th. We have our early goose season here in Western Washington. September 1st, doves.
Yep.
Go shoot some doves. So it's, you know, it's here it comes, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, we'll have that youth pheasant opener later in September. So, it's our last show of August. But here's the deal. I mean, fall is truly the outdoorsman's season. I mean, there's still a lot of fishing to get done and a tremendous amount of hunting that's just opening things up. So stay tuned to the Outdoor Line. We'll cover it all. So tell you what, we're going to pop out here for a quick break. Dave Johnson, our friend on the Pacific Salmon Commission, of course, from Kitsap Marine and Well, joining us next. Talk to us a little bit about the closure action in Ilwaco, what we can expect the rest of the season, and probably a little tuna talk as well. Dave Johnson, joining us next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's wheelhouse, brought to you by Weldcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Well, it's always a kick in the pants to have this guy in the wheelhouse. Don't get him on often enough. Dave Johnson of Kitsap Marina and the Pacific Salmon Commission joining us this morning. Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir.
And I use that word softly.
Yes, I know. And before we jump into it, though, give us your impression of last Saturday's Salmon for Soldiers event at the Port of Everett, buddy.
Well, last Saturday's Salmon for Soldiers event was a wonderful deal. We also had one the weekend before up in CQ for the first time, and that was a hoot taking guys out in the ocean because the coho are just stacked out there with no rain. It was a lot of fun. We had a really good time. The Humpies really played well. We got, you know, our couple guys that we had on our boat got a limit of Humpies and a couple coho, and it was it's always enjoyable to watch people that don't get out very much or at all catch a salmon and be out on the water. It's always very enjoyable, and it's just, I'm blessed to be able to do it.
Yeah, no question about it. I think Orrin Nelson was there too, with you as well, and you know, I appreciate, and thanks for taking those guys out, because that's, again, they'll never forget that stuff. And just to have the fishery that we've got going on right now in Puget Sound to take those vets out on, that's definitely special. Pretty special going on in Owako, to the point that guys are catching a few too many, you may say, kind of victims of our own success in Marine Area 1 there, Dave Johnson.
Well, all in up and down the ocean. You know, we started out this year with 70,000 TAC coho quota for the whole ocean and about 27,500 Chinook. Due to the Queets impacts, we transferred about 20,000 coho down to Area 1 to get out of Queets impacts for the rest of the areas 2 through 4. And, you know, the guys have been very successful down there, and we're projected to be close to 95% to 99%, but weather moved in pretty hard down there in the afternoon, so not sure if we're going to get to the 99%, but things are going to get close enough to quota where, unfortunately, we have to shut it down on Sunday for Area 1. And then, you know, as you know, the river got shut down for Chinook retention at Buoy 10 up to Tongue Point, but east of Tongue Point, you can still catch Chinook, but... You know, it's been a very good season all up and down the coast. Unfortunately, the Queets is our driver on the ocean, and until NOAA and the tribe gets that river fixed, we're kind of screwed out on the ocean.
For guys who still want to go out to the ocean, Westport's been solid, though. I mean, there's still a ton of fish.
Westport's been solid. Probably had one of the best years I can remember in 10, 15 years. Nia Bay and LaPush has been really good for the guys that have got out there, you know. LaPush is open. The guys that have been running out of there, I talk to weekly, have been doing very, very well. The coho have been stacked up pretty good out there, about 350 feet of water out past the rock pile. The coho this year are very large. The ocean conditions have been good. And same thing out at Nia Bay, you know. The guys that are running outside of Tattoos out in the ocean have had really, really good success. There's still some Chinook around. It's been good.
Yeah.
And halibut's open.
Yeah, halibut's still open. It kind of, we've talked about it. Everything's come back healthy and big. The pinks in the Sound have been fat and nice-sized pinks. The Chinook overall, starting in Area 7, in right away in July, they were nice big Chinook.
Yep.
And moving into Area 9, the coast has seen big Chinook. We saw beautiful big fat fish down there in the Columbia. Everything is definitely well fed. What about bait at Westport? Are guys seeing bait out there? It doesn't sound like there's nearly the amount of bait that we're used to seeing in Westport.
No, guys are seeing bait. You know, some of the guys, luckily enough, yesterday got out and got their halibut, lingcod, bass, salmon, and tuna. They're catching some bait. Unfortunate for the tuna guys, Mike's having a hard time catching anchovies, like you know. So, you know, they're limiting it to one scoop for the six-pack guys and the big charter boats. And it's the recreational guys are kind of, it's a jig show or dead bait show, but... But there has been a lot of bait out there for the guys catching salmon. And like I said, the coho are very, very good size this year and very aggressive. And everybody's successful out there.
Dave Johnson of Kitsap Marina joining us this morning. What do you attribute the resurgence of Westport to? Is it strictly?
I think it's a water temperature thing.
Gotcha.
You know, the water temperatures have been all up and down around Westport have been very warm the last few years, and this year they actually got a little bit cooler water, and I think the fish have been parked there all year because there's been bait and cooler water.
You mentioned halibut. So we have a late season halibut opener here in the Sound, out on the coast. So a lot of guys forget about halibut this time of the year. There's so many salmon around, you know, they put away the halibut gear. What are some late season halibut tactics? What should guys be doing if they want to go out and target a halibut on the coast or even here in the Puget Sound?
The nice thing about the later season is it gives the smaller boats opportunity to get out due to weather, which we really haven't had in lots of years. And the halibut seem to move shallower as the summer gets longer. So they don't have to target them in 800-900 feet of water like we normally do in May, out in the ocean. You know, we caught quite a few big fish over 100 pounds in 125, 150 feet of water. So the fish seem to move in shallower, and there's quite a few of them out there. Everybody's success rate's been pretty good. So it's nice to see the opportunity.
Definitely, and I think something else going on with the halibut right now that not a lot of people talk about is to some degree they follow salmonid migrations in. You know, those halibut will feed on dropout or mortality humpies and coho and what have you. And, you know, I think you could do a lot worse than find a little humpy head and kind of put it on a circle hook and drop it down there.
I know you're going out halibut fishing. What are you going to be using for bait?
I've got a couple humpies saved up. And, of course, I've got lots of trout.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
And my trusty pipe jigs and leaking cod jigs. So, looking forward to it. I haven't been out yet. You know, I was building the house this fall and winter, and looking forward to getting out and going out in the ocean, chasing some halibut, and bigling cod, and hopefully the weather gods cooperate.
So I want to say the last time you and I got in a boat together was on a tuna run, and so let's end up on that. Generally, warmer water years are disastrous for salmon, but really, really great for tuna as far as the availability of tuna. This year, we're seeing a cooler, more productive ocean out front, kind of make it harder on the tuna fleet. What do you kind of expect to see coming into September for our albacore opportunity off the Washington coast, Dave Johnson?
I think it's going to get better. I think the tuna should hopefully come in closer, school up more. You know, it has been an odd year. Years ago, we used to love to be able to get into 58, 59 degree water right along a temp breaker in the green water and catch tuna. The last few years, everybody's been looking for 64, 65 mm-hmm. degree water and getting them. But I think it's going to get better. You know, it's like anything else. It's up and down and up and down. I know the guys that called me last night that were out halibut fishing and tuna fishing out of Westport got into some nice fish. And not far out, you know, 55 miles, so 50 miles. So I'm hoping that it's going to get better. I love fishing late September, late October, and chasing jumpers and not ever putting a troll rod in the water.
Yeah, definitely.
And hopefully we get to do it again, buddy.
Some would call 50, 55 miles offshore a ways offshore. That they would call that a long trip. That's still 100 miles on the ocean, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's Dave Johnson. Log on to kitsapmarina.com for more information. Of course, he's our buddy on the Pacific Salmon Commission as well. Dave, let's go talk Tobek into taking us on a tuna run next month sometime, buddy.
Yeah.
All right, man.
We need to do it, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks again and have a wonderful week.
No, you too, Dave. And thanks for everything you do. We appreciate it. Talk to you soon, man. 866-979-3776, locally 206-421-3776. We got Jeff on line one. Good morning, Jeff.
Well, I wish I was out fishing. Hey, I got a question. Did you ever hear any reports from Rivers Innert from the Surdix?
They didn't get a go this year.
Oh, they didn't go.
No, they did not go. I've heard some tremendous things from Rivers Inlet this year, and actually up and down the coast. I'm actually, the wife and I are on a plane tomorrow afternoon out of Richmond, British Columbia to go fish Peregrine Lodge. Can't wait for that. It's late in the season. But the things I heard from Peregrine, and you had a buddy up there that got a 42 last week.
Yep.
I heard of a 54 and several in the 30s. Now, late August is a crapshoot in the Queen Charlotte's. You do not know what you want to get. But in general, Jeff, and Rob Ensley will back me up on this, it took a 57-pounder to win the Craig Derby this year. That's the biggest Chinook that to take that Derby in some 5 years. Similarly in Sitka, it was a fish in the 50-pound class that won that. We're seeing something of a resurgence in not just the size of the Chinook, but in the numbers of the Chinook run. And I think, a lot of locations will definitely bear that out.
And my comment is I usually just fish up in Canada. You know, you usually go to Rivers Inlet.
I hear you.
Mike up there all the time. But my cousin who lives down southwest called me up and said, go buy your license. The fishing's been really good right down here by Blake Island.
Sure.
So we go out last weekend. He bags a nice 14, 15-pounder. And then we get back in, and another buddy who's fishing down in Area 11, he goes, oh, you know, you're fishing in non-retention waters. And I say, what? Nothing posted at the marina. You know, usually they post waters closed to retention or anything like that. So I call the state on Monday a little irked. This is why I don't fish, because, you know, they say, oh, well, you can check the website. Well, I'm just not going to check a website every day to go fishing.
Yeah.
And like I said, no posting.
Yeah. I hear you, Jeff. And that's something that we've really struggled with as well, especially since the printed regulation pamphlet has the San Juans open. And to date, the San Juans have only been open for 7 days of salmon fishing, which is, by no measure equitable at all. And
well,
right now,
the
San Juans are only open for commercial salmon fishing right now.
Well, that's why a lot of guys don't buy licenses,
because
they don't want to have to be a lawyer.
I hear you.
So, but I love your show. I listen every day, every week, so God
right.
bless you.
All right.
Thank you, Jeff.
God bless you back, Jeff. All right, we're going to pop out here for a quick break. Coming up next, the hottest report we heard all week in the techniques you need to succeed. It's RoyRobinsonRV.com's Really Where, and it's next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You got to be kidding me.
Really? Where?
Just coming back from the island of Tinian and the Lady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You got to tell me. I'm not going to tell anybody.
Hey man, can you tell me where you got him?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonRV.com's Really? Where? RoyRobinsonRV.com will take you anywhere. Really?
Whether you're looking for a Class A diesel, Class B motorhome, Class C, Super C, travel trailer, fifth wheel toy hauler, pop-up, camper, boats, or vehicles, you need to head over to Roy Robinson RV, especially to go see that all-new Echo by Winnebago. That thing is absolutely light, nasty, and a great hunting machine. But, dude, how cool was it to spend a few nights in that Winnebago Adventurer RV down at Buoy 10? Just the ability to go take in another fishery like that and do so comfortably and actually get a good night's sleep.
It's like having a house down there.
It is. No, it's crazy.
And we had our Buzz Ramsey in there with us, which is always awesome. Buzz and I sat at the table, well, way later than we should have. I just sat there and listened to Buzz.
Solving the world's fisheries problems one at a time. There's really not a fishery problem with regard to the pinks right now, dude. In fact, you just got a text from one Nicodemus von Kesterson, and he's already got eight pinks and a couple
and
ocean.
Two nice coho.
Yeah, dude.
And he says ocean coho, and when Nicky says they're ocean coho, they're probably open.
And that's great news.
He knows his coho.
Yeah, and Dave Johnson last segment, mentioned that there's a large body of coho out there in Marine Area, 5 CQ that are definitely heading this way. So we can't wait. And we got a nice weather window. We've kind of it's interesting the effects of a rain have, and just especially with pinks that are staging out in saltwater. Man, it sucked a bunch of them into the Skagit, into the Stille, into the Snohomish system, into South Sound rivers, the Puyallup and the Nisqually. I mean, a rain like that just has a phenomenal effect this time
it
of year.
Moves it moves fish.
Does, but it's crazy because things are so dry that, the trees and the soil and everything just suck that moisture up. And so you don't see an actual rise in the river, but it just sends a little pulse of that fresh water into Puget Sound and has a profound effect on these fish.
And it doesn't take much
doesn't.
To move those fish when there's so many of them out there. It's like that first group closest to the mouth of the river, they move. The ones behind them are like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
And they just, it sucks them in. And that's what happened up north. My buddy Isaac has been fishing up there. And then I got a text the other day and he was like, what happened to the humpies? It's like, well,
yeah. And was
they
he
moved.
Was he at West Beach? Was he?
Yeah,
okay.
He'd been out,
right.
West
just,
Beach
just
area.
Just outside of Deception Pass.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And they're gone.
Yeah.
They're in the river. And we
or in Skagit Bay.
Just move. It just moves them.
And it's so having spent the time that we had, you know, down in the mouth of Columbia River, it is a big river estuary, and you just get a feel that these fish are coming in and moving back out, coming in and moving back out. And that's one of the most underrated aspects of what goes on in the estuary to a salmonid that's lived his whole life in salt water. That's a tremendous water balance challenge as they move up into the river. And so it takes them a few tide cycles in and out and in and out before they commit and go up the river. And the tide has an amazing effect on them as well, because those low tides during the day, they experience, you know, obviously it sucks the water out of the estuary. And so they get increasing light levels and decreasing dissolved oxygen levels, which makes them either back out into the back into salt water or shoot on up the river. So you see these pulses of fish heading on up the river, and you see them in evidence jumping in the lower rivers and all over the place. And that's a cool thing about humpies, man, because you know you're fishing in the right spot, because they're popping, they're rolling, they're freaking. Again, you can't really conceive of a million fish in a river, but that's what we're seeing in the Skagit. We're going to see hundreds and hundreds of thousands in the Snohomish and the Stilly, and it's a wonderful thing for all these ocean-borne nutrients to be deposited in these rivers. That, you know, this is the biggest humpy run we've seen in years, and it has a wonderful effect on other fish runs that come in behind it.
And think of the crab, all the crab in those, you know, estuaries.
Yep, yeah,
all that food when these humpies start spawning and then, you know, what it happens? They tip over and they die and they get blown out of the river, and it's just food for everything. Yeah, it's going to be, you know, we're going to have some great crab in this. Our winter crab should be very fat and well fed, you know.
Bummer.
Yeah. look, great pink opportunities all over in the Sound. Now we're starting to see more coho pushing in. But listen, if I had the time and it wasn't hunting season, I would be down on the Columbia, and I'd be following those Chinook up the stream.
Yep.
The guys from the mouth of the Cowlitz on down, I mean, I saw a lot of pics from some of the guys down there the last few days.
Yeah.
Just Scott Salmon, he was done by 9:30 yesterday. They went 6 for 8, and they had 4 big URBs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's probably, you know, one of the things we're going to do next weekend is obviously we're going to cover that lower Columbia, whether it be Todd Daniels or Matt Chandler or Austin Mosier. You know, one of our buddies down there is definitely going to cover that fishery, because that's going to be a phenomenal opportunity. The Hanford Reach is going to fish this year like it hasn't in years. It's absolutely going to be it's going to be a great season. But here closer to home, it's the way this humpy run is going to progress and then transition into a Puget Sound coho opportunity come September. And also, I think it's very realistic to expect a news release from WDFW sometime this week with regard to increased or a coho opportunity in the San Juans.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, I think that's...
It'd be nice to get, you know, what if we got like 10 days of fishing in Area 7?
I think it's going to open up in September. Yeah. I mean, that remains to be seen, but we'll definitely see that. But then now here comes hunting season, you know, and it's not just, you know, it's not just the fact that hunting season's here, but you got to get ready for it, right? If you're a wing shooter, you need to go pull a trigger on your shotgun, go trap and skeet. Okay. Get your eye back. No question about it. You're a big game hunter, time to get to the range, but don't just think your practice starts and stops at the range. I mean, you got to, you know, get yourself out of breath. And then shoot.
And
shoot from a couple different positions. And, you know, I mean, we got a chance, you know, everybody's going to get a chance this year. Okay. I mean, it's, you know, but it's up to you to take advantage of that chance. And if you missed Brian Barney's segment, first part of this hour, and he does that Eastman's Elevated podcast. Brian Barney is an amazingly passionate hunter and an amazingly accomplished hunter. But he'll be the first one to tell you, hey, I trained for this all year long, you know, and it's wonderful to listen to somebody's passion broadcast like that, because he's found his purpose in life. He really, really has. And it's the pursuit of large game animals and keeping himself in shape to do so. And it's just, you know, that's a happy guy, I share his passion, you know, in both the hunting and fishing realms. And I really, I feel bad for people that kind of haven't found that their passion, right?
Yeah, their thing.
Their
it doesn't
thing.
Have to be hunting or fishing.
It doesn't.
That just happens to be ours. Brian and I had a long conversation last night, and we both kind of said the same thing. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm a pretty happy guy. You know, I get to go fish on the boat with Tom all the time. We take people out, get it, you know, experience people catching their first fish. I also get to spend a lot of time in the woods. So I was like, I don't have a lot of bad days, you know?
Yeah, that's
and
it.
And he said the same thing. He's like, yeah, I come home. I'm a better dad. I'm a better husband.
Sure.
I'm better at my business because I have this thing. And, you know, I love that, man. I'm a big fan of Brian Barnes.
Well, the thing about being a hunter fisherman, there's always the next season.
The next season.
There's something to look forward to. And I wouldn't want to live any other way. And being out in the real world is kind of what it's all about. So you missed any of the show, jump on MyNorthWest.com, hit the podcast on TheOutdoorLine.com, or download that Apple podcast app and get our podcast on iTunes. Give Joey a follow at Joey Pyburn on Instagram, at The Outdoor Line on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. For Matt Nelson, behind the glass, for Joey Pyburn right here, I'm Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN, Seattle.